this is probably the most important topic of all time in the world, up to 2024, up to right now. This is the most important topic. I understand this video is long, but you can absolutely take your time and watch it in sections. If you look on the screen now, this is the timeline of the video. You can write it down, choose which sections you want to watch. I just wanted it all here so everybody could share it. So FEMA, the FEMA conspiracy, as they love to call it, and deflated. Certain things go missing on the internet, right? That you thought that you saw, but then you go to look and it's gone. But when you know how to dig, you find remnants of this, so you know you're not crazy. There's been remnants of guillotines, remnants of so many different things from 20 plus years ago of them trying to tell us that this would happen today, and it already happened and we're in the middle of it. This is going to explain it all and show you how to prepare and get ready at the end. It's pretty easy to prepare. All you have to do is know this information. So just sit back, be open, and understand that there are groups of people that don't like other groups of people. One of those is rich, and the other ones is everybody else. So me and you. David Crowley created Ray State. He was a medium-sized director. He was creating this movie to wake everybody up to what's happening with this FEMA thing. Not only did the movie not get finished, but he was killed. There's a documentary on him. It'll be on the website FEMA.com. Sorry for the vulgar language. That's literally the only way to put it, and you're going to understand why here in a minute. So this is going to get into that just a little, and then we're going to get into the Jesse Ventura's conspiracy theory TV show. Okay, now this specific three episodes I have in here are cut up in a certain way to, number one, be fair use, and number two, include extra details that are relevant to today. So you're going to be seeing old episodes from 20 plus years and predict what's going on here today. And this was actually on TV. That's the mind-blowing thing. Now, when you go to look for these episodes, when I looked a couple years ago, only a couple of these were blocked. Now I go to look and there's even more blocked. And it's weird because it's not one season, it's episodes throughout certain seasons. So I went and I bought those. These three are the ones describing what's about to happen, either in 2025 or by 2030. I think it's by 2025. I'm gonna shut up, listen to this, and please share it, download it. This belongs to you and the people, and this whole thing's fair use.
Killing American citizens overseas without a trial. But what about targeting people on U.S. soil? Can they now kill American citizens inside the country? The head of the FBI, when asked about that on Capitol Hill yesterday, stumbled around on this.
Does that only apply to U.S. citizen that's overseas, or does that apply to U.S. citizen that's here as well?
I'd have to go back. I'm not certain whether that was addressed or not.
So that we have clarity here, he is not certain whether it was addressed, whether our government can kill our own people inside our own country. This really needs to be addressed. We can't just answer this question. No, the government doesn't kill our own people. We have a process for this. It's called the justice system. You file charges, you lock them up, you try them before a jury of their peers, and then that's how they don't kill our own people.
Now to a controversial bill resurfacing in Congress. The FEMA camp bill allows the government to run at least six military installations when a national emergency is declared. These emergency centers would be run by FEMA under the command of the Secretary of Homeland Security. So this legislation is meant to be enacted in the event of an emergency. But what exactly does that mean? What is the definition of emergency, especially when it comes to this legislation? When would it be enacted?
Sure. We have to go back to 1988 to the Stafford Act bill to actually get the definition of emergency. And this covers things like tornadoes, floods, hurricanes, natural disasters. But it also gives the president to declare an emergency to avert a catastrophe, which raises the issue of preemptiveness.
Okay. But this also, the goal here is to mobilize resources to have this plan in the to prevent a tragedy from happening, but also a reaction to it, right?
Yes, a reaction. And that's where some of the concerns for civil liberties activists comes in, because it's a slippery slope. Once the government has this power and all these centers are set up, and it's at least six, maybe more, probably more, there is a real potential for the abuse of power here.
Okay, interesting. You know, we have this map that shows how the U.S. would be divided in the event of an emergency, if we can pull that out there. There it is. So this is how the U.S. will be divided into districts. You see 10 of them there. This is according to the National Emergency Center Establishment. Can you describe what this map is? What exactly does that mean? I mean, it doesn't really make sense in terms of states as we know them. What is this classification system?
Sure.
What are the purposes?
It doesn't look like the map that you and I saw in elementary school.
Not at all.
Effectively, the U.S. has been cordoned off into these different districts. And so these new emergency centers will be spread out throughout the United States in most of these eventually. And it gives FEMA and the Department of Homeland Security jurisdiction over what goes on in these places during a time of emergency.
Okay, I want to go into what, because this act does make some specific examples, some exclusions, set some limitations, I should say. So the National Emergency Center Establishment Act, what it does not do, it does not authorize any federal officer or employee to force an individual to enter a national emergency center or prevent an individual from leaving a national emergency center. So, Bob, it looks to me like there are some safeguards there. If you don't like it, you can leave.
Well, I'd like to think so. And this was actually one of the other things that was changed in this new version of the bill. They added this. But if you read what they're saying, you know, federal officer or federal employee, that doesn't cover members of the military. And since these are going to be installed in decommissioned and existing military bases, you're going to have people from the military there. So I would think they will have people, namely in the military, who would be able to force people to stay there or prevent them from leaving if that is their what they want to do.
We have our big vehicle out here, it's an armored vehicle. It's an AMRAP vehicle. It's mine resistant, ambush protected is what it stands for. The team commander, which is myself, I'll stand in the AMRAP and provide overwatch for the team while they're making entry into the house. We have gun ports in here, so we can actually shoot from within the vehicle. You may think it's pretty loud, but actually it's not too bad. But we do have gun ports there and in the back, and there are two on the side as well.
There are some people who say, you know, this is another sign that the U.S. government is preparing for some sort of mass civil unrest.
The last time the federal government claimed that it could kill Americans was in the Civil War. And even Lincoln said it could only be done in during combat. This federal government, this administration, says it can kill Americans when they're riding with their children in a car in a desert.
And the right side of the road was filled with which I thought was portable toilets. I never looked at them that close. Same in color, maybe black, but which was an odd color. And I was sitting there going over my notes, and a van pulled alongside of me that turned out to be the property owner. And he greeted me, and he was by himself. And so we had a good little dialogue there, and I asked him about the field of black boxes. What were they? Because I'd never seen anything like that. And his statement was that if he told me, I would be one of few people in Madison, Georgia that knew about them. And he says they're disposable coffins, I believe he told me. And he says there's 100, at that time, he said there was 125,000 there. And they were stacked, he told me, 15 high. I asked him who owned them, and he stated that the CDC owned them and that they were leasing the land, leasing his land for storage. And he said his brother worked with the CDC in Atlanta and had been asked by the CDC to do a 3-year extension to place temporary morgues all across the nation.
Thank you. because of the dangers that we face in the world, you know, some new and unpredicted threat, we need more authority, we need more power, and there will be nothing the people can do at that point to oppose it, and it'll be turnkey tyranny.
The U.S. has been cordoned off into these different districts, and so these new emergency centers will be spread out throughout the United States in most of these eventually, and it gives FEMA and the Department of Homeland Security jurisdiction over what goes on in these places during a time of emergency.
You will never see it coming. You think I'm joking?
Stop! What the fuck?
Government has stripped us of our civil liberties.
Obama didn't wake up and say, I want to see all Americans and find out what they're doing. This is something that came from the Defense Department and or the Department of Justice.
Well, the Defense Department is not permitted to do anything in the United States of America against American citizens without an executive order from the president. And he can only issue one in time of rebellion or national disaster. That's the federal law. For him to permit the Air Force to spy on us, no matter how noble their goal may be, is a violation of federal law, unless he signed an executive order and we don't know about it, in which case that would be unlawful because the executive orders of this nature have to be public.
And other places. And I think you're going to still see the evolution of DHS unless we stop this monster. That's why we have people like Napolitano telling us that we're going to have DHS briefs at our local Walmart and our local stores at these telescreens to be worried about terrorism and spy on their neighbors. And that's why these memos are leaking again and again and again, because people who are not only in these departments but work with this department are leaking this to the public because they know it's out of control and wrong.
Let's get back to the breaking news right now. The Washington Post and The Guardian reporting the U.S. government is now also tapping directly into the central servers of 9 leading internet companies, including Microsoft, Yahoo, Google, Facebook, AOL, Skype, YouTube, and Apple. The newspapers just released new information to back up their reporting. Tom Foreman is here taking a closer look. What's the latest?
This information is really stunning, Wolf, when you consider it. A firsthand experience with these systems and horror at their capabilities is what drove a career intelligence officer to provide PowerPoint slides about PRISM and supporting materials to the Washington Post in order to expose what he believes to be a gross intrusion on privacy. Quote, they quite literally can watch your ideas form as you type, the officer said. Now let's look at some of these slides here, Wolf, that were from this presentation, because they really are quite surprising. This is the overview slide. You'll notice at the bottom the date there, April 2013, very recent. Now look at what this thing is all about. If you move to the next slide here, you can see that they're talking in here about how communications flow from place to place on systems like Google and Yahoo, that they're apparently, according to this program, monitoring. And now look at the next part here. What is being monitored? This is the part that will most get people's attention. Look at that. There are the companies over there on the left, but what they're allegedly able to look at is email, chats, videos, photos, stored data, video conferencing, all sorts of things that people would have thought were private, that were just on their desktop. This is what is certainly going to put people up in arms to some degree, Wolf, because you look at that, plus look at the data agreements here that they made with these different companies. They're the dates there. If you look side to side, they're a little hard to see. You see at the bottom, 2007 up to 2013. That's the timeline of how they entered into this program with all of these companies that virtually all of us rely on all the time. Again, reporting from The Guardian and The Washington Post suggesting that all the coverage today about cell phones looks like the tip of the iceberg. Here's this ultra-secret program called PRISM they're reporting on, which has been allowing the government to look in on the desktops of computer users, if this report is correct, and simply see what we're doing, who we're communicating with, the things we're writing, the video messages we're exchanging, all sorts of things that, again, many, many computer users thought were private.
Apparently, though, authorized by Congress and the Patriot Act, authorized by a judge with these foreign intelligence courts, authorized, obviously, by the President of the United States. We're going to have much more on this coming up. We'll see what's going on, but pretty shocking information.
My name's Ed Snowden. I'm 29 years old. I work for Booz Allen Hamilton as an infrastructure analyst for NSA in Hawaii. I've been a systems engineer, systems administrator, senior advisor for the Central Intelligence Agency, solutions consultant, and a telecommunications information systems officer.
One of the things people are going to be most interested in trying to understand who you are and what you're thinking is there came some point in time when you crossed this line of thinking about being a whistleblower to making the choice to actually become a whistleblower. Walk people through that decision-making process.
When you're in positions of privileged access, like a systems administrator for these sort of intelligence community agencies, you're exposed to a lot more information on a broader scale than the average employee. And because of that, you see things that may be disturbing, but over the course of a normal person's career, you'd only see one or two of these instances. When you see everything, you see them on a more frequent basis, and you recognize that some of these things are actually abuses. And when you talk to people about them in a place like this, where this is the normal state of business, people tend not to take them very seriously and, you know, move on from them. But over time, that awareness of wrongdoing sort of builds up, and you feel compelled to talk about it. And the more you talk about it, the more you're ignored, the more you're told it's not a problem, until eventually you realize that these things need to be determined by the public, not by somebody who was simply hired by the government.
Talk a little bit about how the American surveillance state actually functions. Does it target the actions of Americans?
NSA and the intelligence community in general is focused on getting intelligence wherever it can, by any means possible, that it believes on the grounds of sort of a self-certification that they serve the national interest. Originally, we saw that focus very narrowly tailored as foreign intelligence gathered overseas. Now, increasingly, we see that it's happening domestically. And to do that, the NSA specifically targets the communications of everyone. It ingests them by default. It collects them in its system, and it filters them, and it analyzes them, and it measures them, and it stores them for periods of time, simply because that's the easiest, most efficient, and most valuable way to achieve these ends. So while they may be intending to target someone associated with a foreign government or someone that they suspect of terrorism, they're collecting your communications to do so.
Why should people care about surveillance?
Because even if you're not doing anything wrong, you're being watched and recorded. And the storage capability of these systems increases every year consistently by orders of magnitude to where it's getting to the point you don't have to have done anything wrong. You simply have to eventually fall under suspicion from somebody, even by a wrong call. And then they can use this system to go back in time and scrutinize every decision you've ever made, every friend you've ever discussed something with, and attack you on that basis to sort of derive suspicion from an innocent life and paint anyone in the context of a wrongdoer.
Have you given thought to what it is that the U.S. government's response to your conduct is in terms of what they might say about you, how they might try to depict you, what they might try to do to you?
Yeah, I could be, you know, rendered by the CIA. I could have people come after me or any of their third-party partners. You know, they work closely with a number of other nations. Or, you know, they could pay off the triads or, you know, any of their agents or assets. We've got a CIA station just up the road in the consulate here in Hong Kong. And I'm sure they're going to be very busy for the next week. And that's a fear I'll live under for the rest of my life, however long that happens to be. You can't come forward against the world's most powerful intelligence agencies and be completely free from risk, because they're such powerful adversaries that no one can meaningfully oppose them. If they want to get you, they'll get you in time. But at the same time, you have to make a determination about what it is that's important to you. And if living unfreely but comfortably is something you're willing to accept, and I think many of us are, it's the human nature, you can get up every day, you can go to work, you can collect your large paycheck for relatively little work against the public interest and go to sleep at night after watching your shows. But if you realize that that's the world that you helped create, and it's going to get worse with the next generation and the next generation who extend the capabilities of this sort of architecture of oppression, you realize that you might be willing to accept any risk, and it doesn't matter what the outcome is, so long as the public gets to make their own decisions about how that's applied. The greatest fear that I have regarding the outcome for America of these disclosures is that nothing will change. People will see in the media all of these disclosures. They'll know the lengths that the government is going to grant themselves powers unilaterally to create greater control over American society and global society. But they won't be willing to take the risks necessary to stand up and fight to change things, to force their representatives to actually take a stand in their interests. And the months ahead, the years ahead, it's only going to get worse until eventually there will be a time where policies will change, because the only thing that restricts the activities of the surveillance state are policy. Even our agreements with other sovereign governments, we consider that to be a stipulation of policy rather than a stipulation of law. And because of that, a new leader will be elected. They'll flip the switch, say that because of the crisis, because of the dangers that we face in the world, you know, some new and unpredicted threat, we need more authority, we need more power, and there will be nothing the people can do at that point to oppose it, and it'll be turnkey tyranny.
Somebody didn't want the gray state investigated, explored, and unveiled. That's why David Crowley is dead. He was the writer and director of one of the most controversial movies in modern history. And somebody didn't want him to produce it. What was so threatening about David Crowley and the gray state concept? Like gray state, many Hollywood films have depicted apocalyptic themes and end-of-the-world scenarios. Yet the directors of these films are still alive. Roland Emmerich wasn't murdered after directing Blockbusters 2012 and A Day After Tomorrow. Steven Soderbergh wasn't killed after his movie Contagion. But David Crowley is dead, along with his wife and child. They were killed before the production could be completed. What was so dangerous about Gray State? David Crowley claimed that his movie was based on real events, not Hollywood propaganda like you see in movies such as 2012.
California is going down!
God, you sound like a crazy person. The governor just said we're fine now.
The guy's an actor, he's reading a script!
So the Gray State is essentially an artistic representation of real aspects put into a fictional format. Once you open your eyes and start looking at all these trends like RFID, like martial law, like FEMA, like executive orders, you have to act within your own capacity to sort of talk about this. A lot of people filter that into the political realm. A lot of people do other things like grassroots style. I mean, I'm a filmmaker. Danny's an actor. So we put our heads together and we started making a project that would act within our own faculty to portray that in a creative manner. So there's a story here. You know, I have to start telling a story. So I was looking for the next film project to work on anyway. I'm like, well, this would be perfect. And it's not really perfect because you have to kind of filter down all this stuff into a narrative storyline that's not just propaganda telling you what's going to happen next, like 2012 or a day after tomorrow. It's got to be a human story, and it's got to be endearing and compelling. The way we're different is we're independent, and we don't expect any participation from any studios just because of its contentious nature. I mean, anyone knows that Hollywood has not approached this topic so directly before. That's what makes Gray State so compelling. Is that different? Definitely the trailer is our best efforts to kind of show this world and expose these very real issues that exist in our world today.
David claims that Hollywood has never dealt with topics like RFID, internment camps in America, and detention. Instead, they have produced propaganda in place of real issues. When Hollywood does discuss internment and detention, it's almost always about World War II and the Holocaust. Literally thousands of films have been produced about the Holocaust. And yet one single film that addresses the potential for a Holocaust in the United States is stopped mid-production after its director is murdered. Seems a bit odd, doesn't it? They don't want Americans, Canadians, and other Western countries to know what is coming. And that is a plan to intentionally collapse Western society. If you don't believe me, read the plan that's been in the books for over a century. Planned out by the Illuminati and penned by Albert Pike back in the 1800s in his three World War predictions. Gray State was simply too threatening. It revealed too much, not just the obvious points of what could happen with the collapse of a society, things like martial law, food shortages, and a provisional government. It goes beyond this. David knew a secret, and he left it inside of the trailer for Gray State, in plain sight. David Crowley used the Illuminati's favorite game against the notorious cabal. It's a game they've played with the human race for years. They provide clues about the future to toy with us. They did it with 9/11. They've done it with other major catastrophes. It's called predictive programming. On occasion, though, they get outsmarted at their own game. What was David's hidden message inside the Gray State? And could it be the reason for his death? Perhaps the scariest part of Gray State's conceptual trailer is this character here, who appears to be operating a guillotine. David Crowley was very intentional in this frame of the movie. He added something that I believe he wanted the people to know about. Who is the identity of this executioner? If you look closely, you will see that this terrifying character is wearing something around his waist. It appears to look like an apron. The executioner wears a Freemason apron, complete with the all-seeing eye, the compass, and the two pillars. I do believe David Crowley is trying to tell us something. He is telling us that the organization behind the French and American revolutions, the organization behind the Italian Revolution of 1830, the organization that outlined a plan to overtake the Vatican in a document called the Alta Vendita, the organization behind the Trail of Tears and the deaths of thousands of Native Americans under Freemason Grand Master Andrew Jackson, the organization behind the Ku Klux Klan in the United States post-Civil War and its rebirth in 1915, the organization behind the detonations at Hiroshima and Nagasaki during 33rd degree Freemason Harry Truman's presidency. These are men with a radical revolutionary agenda throughout the entire world because they worship and follow a radical revolutionary deity. The first to have led a revolt against the Most High Lord. David Crowley knew something, and he was trying to warn the people. The ones behind the FEMA death camps, the guillotines, and the detention of Americans unites the Freemasons. They're planning a second American Revolution.
How things were.
Not just yet, of every enemy of the state.
And then I woke up here.
Is the gray state real? Absolutely, it's real. We see it every day. We see it in the news. We see it on headlines, but people still don't acknowledge it.
The idea of a real gray state is terrifying.
It's a battle for your mind and your choice and what you do with that choice.
It's a game of numbers, and we're losing.
And it's been said that you should never doubt that a small group of people who have firm convictions can change the world, because that's the only way it's ever happened before. Liberty doesn't come from our government. Sometimes they think they're passing it out, and sometimes they are always restricting as if it's their liberty rather than our liberty.
We should fight tooth and nail for our freedom, because without our freedoms, we're not America.
We have permitted our government to undermine our civil liberties, all in the name of safety and security. Never sacrifice your liberties for safety or security, because you'll end up with neither.
This is what's happened the last 4 years. The evidence is out on the table. The monetary system doesn't work. The foreign policy doesn't work. Leads to endless wars. The economic system is deeply in debt.
Once they strip the rights from you, you will pay hell to get them back.
This document is the only thing that's going to save us. And if Barack Obama refuses to follow it, as he has demonstrated time and time again, nothing's going to change, folks.
What's happened now is that you're seeing the mobilization of federalized police,
National Guard in our city streets, and this stuff is happening.
We are living in a militarized police state without anyone acknowledging that we are.
The military now can arrest any American citizen, no lawyer, no charges, no trial, can be put in prison indefinitely.
If you study history and you know that you allow this kind of abuse of power by the federal government,
I fear what happens to us down the road.
It's kind of like the people on the Titanic who didn't get off the ship.
They call us dangerous. Of course we're dangerous. We're dangerous to the status quo, and the people have been ripping us off.
Should we be following blindly like this, or should we stand up?
Change this country, go back to our roots, decide that we want to live in a free country and not in a country rapidly drifting toward totalitarianism. We need to reverse the course.
Really stand up for what's right, and that is a scary place to be.
Senator, I'm sure that you would agree that your service in the Senate up to this point has not reflected any particular concern for the larger contributors.
Well, the fortunate thing is I didn't have many larger contributors, and the only reason... See, I went to the big guys for the money. I was ready to prostitute myself in the manner in which I talk about it. But what happened was they said, come back when you're 40, son. And so I had to go out. So I had to go to a number of small contributors.
Well, I think we're all grateful, Senator. You didn't take no for an answer.
Two ways in which people are controlled. First of all, frighten people, and secondly, demoralize them. An educated, healthy, and confident nation is harder to govern. And I think there's an element in the thinking of some people. We don't want people to be educated, healthy, and confident because they would get out of control. The top 1% of the world's population own 80% of the world's wealth. It's incredible that people put up with it, but they're poor, they're demoralized, they're frightened. And therefore they think perhaps the safest thing to do is take orders and hope for the best.